enough to the hospital for it to be dark. Others were on their way back. I pressed myself against the rock wall and crept forward as quietly as I could. My breathing was ragged from running. I covered my mouth with my hand to stifle the sound. "Why we keep doing this?" someone complained. I wasn't sure whose voice it was. Someone I didn't know well. Maybe Violetta? It held that same depressed tone that I recognized from before. It erased any notion that I'd been imagining things.
Doc didn't want to. It was Jared's idea this time.
I was sure that it was Jeffrey who spoke now, though his voice was a little changed by the subdued revulsion in it. Jeffrey had been with Trudy on the raid, of course. They did everything together.
I thought he was the biggest opponent to this business.
That was Travis, I guessed.
He's more motivated now, Jeffrey answered.
His voice was quiet, but I could tell he was angry about something. They passed just half a foot from where I cringed into the rocks. I froze, holding my breath.
I think it's sick, Violetta muttered. Disgusting. It's never going to work.
They walked slowly, their steps weighted with despair. No one answered her. No one spoke again in my hearing. I waited until their footsteps had faded a little, but I couldn't wait until the sound disappeared completely. Ian might be following me already. I crept forward as quickly as I could, and then started jogging again when I decided it was safe. I saw the first faint hints of daylight streaming around the curving tunnel ahead, and I shifted into a quieter lope that still kept me moving swiftly. I knew that once I was around the gradual arc, I would be able to see the doorway into Doc's realm. I followed the bend, and the light grew brighter. I moved cautiously now, putting each foot down with silent care. It was very quiet. For a moment I wondered if I was wrong and there was no one here at all. Then, as the uneven entrance came into view, throwing a block of white sunlight against the opposite wall, I could hear the sound of quiet sobbing. I tiptoed right to the edge of the gap and paused, listening. The sobbing continued. Another sound, a soft rhythmic thudding, kept time with it.
"There, there."
It was Jeb's voice, thick with some emotion.
It's okay, Doc. Don't take it so hard."
Hushed footsteps, more than one set, were moving around the room. Fabric rustling. A brushing sound. It reminded me of the sounds of cleaning. There was a smell that didn't belong here. Strange. Not quite metallic, but not quite anything else, either. The smell was not familiar. I was sure I had never smelled it before, and yet I had an odd feeling that it should be familiar to me. I was afraid to move around the corner.
"What's the worst they will do to us?" Mel pointed out.
"Make us leave?
You're right."
Things had definitely changed if that was the worst I could fear from the humans now. I took a deep breath, noticing again that strange, wrong smell, and eased around the rocky edge into the hospital. No one noticed me. Doc was kneeling on the floor, his face buried in his hands, his shoulders heaving. Jeb leaned over him, patting his back. Jared and Kyle were laying a crude stretcher beside one of the cots in the middle of the room. Jared's face was hard. The mask had come back while he was away. The cots were not empty as they usually were. Something, hidden under dark green blankets, filled the length of both of them. Long and irregular, with familiar curves and angles. Doc's homemade table was arranged at the head of these cots, in the brightest spot of sunlight. The table glittered with silver, shiny scalpels, and an assortment of antiquated medical tools that I couldn't put a name to. Brighter than these were other silver things. Shimmering segments of silver stretched in twisted, tortured pieces across the table. Tiny silver strands plucked and naked and scattered. Splatters of silver liquid smeared on the table, the blankets, the walls. The quiet in the room was shattered by my scream. The whole room was shattered. It spun and shook to the sound, whirled around me so that I couldn't find the way out. The walls, the silver-stained walls, rose up to block my escape no matter which way I turned. Someone shouted my name, but I couldn't hear whose voice it was. The screaming was too loud.
It hurt my head. The stone wall, oozing silver, slammed into me, and I fell to the floor. Heavy hands held me there.
"Doc, help! What's wrong with her? Is it having a fit? What did she see?"
"Nothing, nothing. The bodies were covered."
"That was a lie. The bodies were hideously uncovered, strewn in obscene contortions across the glittering table. Mutilated, dismembered, tortured bodies, ripped into grotesque shreds. I had clearly seen the vestigial feelers still attached to the truncated anterior section of a child. Just a child. A baby. A baby thrown haphazardly in maimed pieces across the table, smeared with its own blood. My stomach rolled like the walls were rolling, and acid clawed its way up my throat.
"Wanda, can you hear me? Is she conscious? I think she's going to throw up."
The last voice was right. Hard hands held my head while the acid in my stomach violently overflowed.
"What do we do, Doc? Hold on to her. Don't let her hurt herself."
I coughed and squirmed, trying to escape. My throat cleared.
"Let me go!"
I was finally able to choke out. The words were garbled.
"Get away from me! Get away! You're monsters! Torturers!"
I shrieked wordlessly again, twisting against the restraining arms.
"Calm down, Wanda. Shh, it's okay."
That was Jared's voice. For once it didn't matter that it was Jared.
"Monster!"
I screamed at him.
"She's hysterical," Doc told him. "Hold on."
A sharp, stinging blow whipped across my face. There was a gasp far away from the immediate chaos.
"What are you doing?" Ian roared. "It's having a seizure or something, Ian. Doc's trying to bring it around."
My ears were ringing, but not from the slap. It was the smell. The smell of the silver blood dripping down the walls. The smell of the blood of souls. The room writhed around me as though it were alive. The light twisted into strange patterns, curved into the shapes of monsters from my past. A vulture unfurled its wings. A claw beast swung its heavy pincers toward my face. Doc smiled and reached for me with silver trickling from his fingertips. The room spun once more, slowly, and then went black. Unconsciousness didn't claim me for long. It must have been only seconds later when my head cleared. I was all too lucid. I wished I could stay oblivious longer. I was moving, rocking back and forth, and it was too black to see. Mercifully, the horrible smell had faded. The musty, humid air of the caves was like perfume. The feeling of being carried, being cradled, was familiar. That first week after Kyle had injured me, I'd traveled many places in Ian's arms.
"Thought she'd have guessed what we were up to."
"Looks like I was wrong," Jared was murmuring.
"You think that's what happened?"
Ian's voice cut hard in the quiet tunnel.
"That she was scared because Doc was trying to take the other souls out? That she was afraid for herself?"
Jared didn't answer for a minute.
"You don't?"
Ian made a sound in the back of his throat.
"No, I don't. As disgusted as I am that you would bring back more victims for Doc, bring them back now. As much as that turns my stomach, that's not what upset her. How can you be so blind? Can't you imagine what that must have looked like to her in there? I know we had the bodies covered before—" "The wrong bodies, Jared! Oh, I'm sure Wanda would be upset by a human corpse. She's so gentle. Violence and death aren't a part of her normal world. But think what the things on that table must have meant to her."
It took him another moment.
"Oh, yes. If you or I had walked in on a human vivisection with torn body parts, with blood splattered on everything, it wouldn't have been as bad for us as it was for her. We'd have seen it all before, even before the invasion, in horror movies at least. I'd bet she's never been exposed to anything like that in all her lives."
I was getting sick again. His words were bringing it back. The sight, the smell.
"Let me go,"
I whispered.
Put me down. I didn't mean to wake you. I'm sorry.
The last words were fervent, apologizing for more than waking me. Let me go.
You're not well. I'll take you to your room.
No, put me down now.
Wanda,
now!
I shouted.
I shoved against Ian's chest, kicking my legs free at the same time. The ferocity of my struggle surprised him. He lost his hold on me and I half fell into a crouch on the floor. I sprang up from the crouch, running.
Wanda! Let her go.
Don't touch me! Wanda, come back! It sounded like they were wrestling behind me, but I didn't slow. Of course they were fighting. They were humans. Violence was pleasure to them. I didn't pause when I was back in the light. I sprinted through the big cavern without looking at any of the monsters there. I could feel their eyes on me, and I didn't care. I didn't care where I was going, either. Just somewhere I could be alone. I avoided the tunnels that had people near them, running down the first empty one I could find. It was the eastern tunnel. This was the second time I'd sprinted through this corridor today. Last time in joy, this time in horror. It was hard to remember how I'd felt this afternoon, knowing the raiders were home. Everything was dark and gruesome now, including their return. The very stones seemed evil. This way was the right choice for me, though. No one had any reason to come here, and it was empty. I ran to the farthest end of the tunnel, into the deep night of the empty game room. Could I really have played games with them such a short time ago? Believed the smiles on their faces, not seeing the beasts underneath? I moved forward until I stumbled ankle-deep into the oily waters of the dark spring. I backed away, my hand outstretched, searching for a wall. When I found a rough ridge of stone, sharp-edged beneath my fingers, I turned into the depression behind the protrusion and curled myself into a tight ball on the ground there. It wasn't what we thought. Doc wasn't hurting anyone on purpose. He was just trying to say, "Get out of my head!" I shrieked. As I thrust her away from me, gagged her so that I wouldn't have to bear her justifications, I realized how weak she'd grown in all these months of friendliness, how much I'd been allowing, encouraging. It was almost too easy to silence her, as easy as it should have been from the beginning. It was only me now. Just me, and the pain and the horror that I would never escape. I would never not have that image in my head again. I would never be free of it. It was forever a part of me. I didn't know how to mourn here. I could not mourn in human ways for these lost souls whose names I would never know, for the broken child on the table. I had never had to mourn on the origin. I didn't know how it was done there, in the truest home of my kind. So I settled for the way of the bats. It seemed appropriate, here where it was as black as being blind. The bats mourned with silence, not singing for weeks on end until the pain of the nothingness left behind by the lack of music was worse than the pain of losing a soul. I'd known loss there. A friend, killed in a freak accident, a falling tree in the night, found too late to save him from the crushed body of his host. Spiraling, upward, harmony. Those were the words that would have held his name in this language. Not exact, but close enough. There had been no horror in his death, only grief, an accident. The bubbling stream was too discordant to remind me of our songs. I could grieve beside its harmony-free clatter. I wrapped my arms tightly around my shoulders and mourned for the child and the other soul who had died with it. My siblings, my family. If I had found a way free of this place, if I had warned the seekers, their remains would not be so casually mangled and mixed together in that blood-steeped room. I wanted to cry, to keen in misery, but that was the human way. So I locked my lips and hunched in the darkness, holding the pain inside. My silence, my mourning, was stolen from me. It took them a few hours. I heard them looking, heard their voices echo and warp in the long tubes of air. They were calling for me, expecting an answer. When they received no answer, they brought lights. Not the dim blue lanterns that might never have revealed my hiding place here, buried under all this blackness, but the sharp yellow lances of flashlights. They swept back and forth, pendulums of light. Even with the flashlights, they didn't find me until the third search of the room. Why couldn't they leave me alone? When the flashlight's beam finally disinterred me, there was a gasp of relief.
"I found her! Tell the others to get back inside. She's in here, after all."
I knew the voice, but I didn't put a name to it. Just another monster.
"Wanda? Wanda, are you all right?"
I didn't raise my head or open my eyes. I was in mourning. "Where's Ian?"
"Should we get Jamie, do you think?"
"He shouldn't be on that leg." "Jamie." I shuddered at his name. My Jamie. He was a monster, too. He was just like the rest of them. My Jamie. It was a physical pain to think of him.
"Where is she?"
"Over here, Jared. She's not responding."
"We didn't touch her."
"Here, give me the light," Jared said. "Now the rest of you, get out of here. Emergency over. Give us some air, okay?"
There was a shuffling noise that didn't travel far.
"Seriously, people. You're not helping. Leave. All the way out."
The shuffling was slow at first, but then became more productive. I could hear many footsteps fading away in the room and then disappearing out of it. Jared waited until it was silent again.
"Okay, Wanda. It's just you and me."
He waited for some kind of answer.
"Look, I guess that must have been pretty bad. We never wanted you to see that. I'm sorry."
"Sorry? Jeffrey'd said it was Jared's idea. He wanted to cut me out, slice me into little pieces, fling my blood on the wall. He'd slowly mangle a million of me if he could find a way to keep his favorite monster alive with him. Slash us all to slivers." He was quiet for a long time, still waiting for me to react.
"You look like you want to be alone. That's okay. I can keep them away if that's what you want."
I didn't move. Something touched my shoulder. I cringed away from it, into the sharp stones.
"Sorry," he muttered.
I heard him stand, and the light, red behind my closed eyes, began to fade as he walked away. He met someone in the mouth of the cave.
"Where is she? She wants to be alone. Let her be."
"Don't get in my way again, Hal.
Do you think she wants comfort from you? From a human? I wasn't party to this."
Jared answered in a lower voice, but I could still hear the echoes.
"Not this time. You're one of us, Ian. Her enemy. Did you hear what she said in there? She was screaming monsters. That's how she sees us now. She doesn't want your comfort. Give me the light."
They didn't speak again. A minute passed, and I heard one set of slow footsteps moving around the edge of the room. Eventually, the light swept across me, turning my lids red again. I huddled myself more tightly together, expecting him to touch me. There was a quiet sigh, and then the sound of him sitting on the stone, not as close beside me as I would have expected. With a click, the light disappeared. I waited in the silence for a long time for him to speak, but he was just as silent as I was. Finally, I stopped waiting and returned to my mourning. Ian did not interrupt. I sat in the blackness of the big hole in the ground and grieved for lost souls with a human at my side. Chapter 41. Vanished. Ian sat with me for 3 days in the darkness. He left for only a few short minutes at a time to get us food and water. At first, Ian ate, though I did not. Then, as he realized that it wasn't a loss of appetite that left my tray full, he stopped eating too. I used his brief absences to deal with the physical needs that I could not ignore, thankful for the proximity of the odorous stream. As my fast lengthened, those needs vanished. I couldn't keep from sleeping, but I did not make myself comfortable. The first day, I woke to find my head and shoulders cradled on his lap. I recoiled from him, shuddering so violently that he did not repeat the gesture. After that, I slumped against the stones where I was, and when I woke, I would curl back up into my silent ball at once.
"Please," Ian whispered on the third day.
At least I thought it was the third day. There was no way to be sure of the passing time in this dark, silent place. It was the first time he'd spoken. I knew a tray of food was in front of me. He pushed it closer till it touched my leg. I cringed away.
"Please, Wanda. Please eat something."
He put his hand on my arm but moved away quickly when I flinched out from under it.
"Please don't hate me. I'm so sorry. If I'd known, I would have stopped them. I won't let it happen again."
He would never stop them. He was just one among many. And as Jared had said, he'd had no objections before. I was the enemy. Even in the most compassionate, humankind's limited scope of mercy was reserved for their own. I knew Doc could never intentionally inflict pain on another person. I doubted he would even be capable of watching such a thing, tender as his feelings were. But a worm? A centipede? Why would he care about the agony of a strange alien creature? Why would it bother him to murder a baby, slowly, slicing it apart piece by piece, if it had no human mouth to scream with?
"I should have told you," Ian whispered.
Would it have mattered if I'd simply been told, rather than having seen the tortured remains for myself? Would the pain be less strong?
"Please eat."
The silence returned. We sat in it for a while, maybe another hour. Ian got up and walked quietly away. I could make no sense of my emotions. In that moment, I hated the body I was bound to. How did it make sense that his going depressed me? Why should it pain me to have the solitude I craved? I wanted the monster back, and that was plainly wrong. I wasn't alone for long. I didn't know if Ian had gone to get him or if he'd been waiting for Ian to leave, but I recognized Jeb's contemplative whistle as it approached in the darkness. The whistling stopped a few feet from me, and there was a loud click. A beam of yellow light burned my eyes. I blinked against it. Jeb set the flashlight down, bulb up. It threw a circle of light on the low ceiling and made a wider, more diffuse sphere of light around us. Jeb settled himself against the wall beside me.
"Gonna starve yourself, then? Is that the plan?"
I glared at the stone floor. If I was being honest with myself, I knew that my mourning was over. I had grieved. I hadn't known the child or the other soul in the Cave of Horrors. I could not grieve for strangers forever. No. Now I was angry.
"You want to die? There are easier and faster ways."
As if I wasn't aware of that.
"So give me to Doc, then," I croaked.
Jeb wasn't surprised to hear me speak. He nodded to himself, as if this was exactly what he'd known would come out of my mouth.
"Did you expect us to just give up, Wanderer?"
Jeb's voice was stern and more serious than I'd ever heard it before.
"We have a stronger survival instinct than that. Of course we want to find a way to get our minds back. It could be any one of us someday. So many people we love are already lost. It isn't easy. It nearly kills Doc each time he fails. You've seen that. But this is our reality, Wanda. This is our world. We've lost a war. We are about to be extinct. We're trying to find ways to save ourselves."
For the first time, Jeb spoke to me as if I were a soul and not a human. I had a sense that the distinction had always been clear to him, though. He was just a courteous monster. I couldn't deny the truth of what he was saying, or the sense of it. The shock had worn off, and I was myself again. It was in my nature to be fair. Some few of these humans could see my side of things. Ian, at least. Then I, too, could consider their perspective. They were monsters, but maybe monsters who were justified in what they were doing. Of course they would think violence was the answer. They wouldn't be able to imagine any other solution. Could I blame them that their genetic programming restricted their problem-solving abilities in this way? I cleared my throat, but my voice was still hoarse with disuse.
Hacking up babies won't save anyone, Jeb. Now they're all dead.
He was quiet for a moment.
We can't tell you're young from you're old. No, I know that. Your kind don't spare our babies.
We don't torture them, though. We never intentionally cause anyone pain.
You do worse than that. You erase them.
You do both.
We do, yes. Because we have to try. We have to keep fighting. It's the only way we know. It's keep trying or turn our faces to the wall and die.
He raised one eyebrow at me. That must have been what it looked like I was doing. I sighed and took the water bottle Ian had left close to my foot. I drained it in one long pull and then cleared my throat again.
It will never work, Jeb. You can keep cutting us out in pieces, but you'll just murder more and more sentient creatures of both species. We do not willingly kill, but our bodies are not weak either. Our attachments may look like soft silver hair, but they're stronger than your organs. That's what's happening, isn't it? Doc slices up my family and their limbs shred through the brains of yours.
Like cottage cheese,
he agreed. I gagged and then shuddered at the image.
It makes me sick, too, he admitted. Doc gets real bent out of shape. Every time he thinks he's got it cracked, it goes south again. He's tried everything he can think of, but he can't save them from getting turned into oatmeal. Your souls don't respond to injected sedation or poison.
My voice came out rough with new horror. Of course not. Our chemical makeup is completely different.
Once one of yours seemed to guess what was going to happen. Before Doc could knock the human out, the silver thingy tore up his brain from the inside. Of course, we didn't know that until Doc opened him up. The guy just collapsed.
I was surprised, strangely impressed. That soul must have been very brave. I had not had the courage to take that step, even in the beginning when I thought they were going to try to torture this very information from me. I didn't imagine they would try to slash the answer out for themselves. That course was so obviously doomed to failure it had never occurred to me. Jeb, we are relatively tiny creatures, utterly dependent on unwilling hosts. We wouldn't have lasted very long if we didn't have some defenses.
I'm not denying that your kind have a right to those defenses. I'm just telling you that we're gonna keep fighting back however we can. We don't mean to cause anyone pain. We're making this up as we go. But we will keep fighting.
We looked at each other. Then maybe you should have Doc slice me up. What else am I good for?
Now, don't be silly, Wanda. We humans aren't so logical as all that. We have a greater range of good and bad in us than you do. Well, maybe mostly the bad.
I nodded at that, but he kept going, ignoring me.
We value the individual. We probably put too much emphasis on the individual if it comes right down to it. How many people, in the abstract, would, let's say Paige,
How many people would she sacrifice to keep Andy alive? The answer wouldn't make any sense if you were looking at the whole of humanity as equals. The way you are valued here. Well, that don't make much sense when you look at it from humanity's perspective either. But there's some who would value you above another human. Have to admit I put myself in that group. I count you as a friend, Wanda. Of course, that's not gonna work well if you hate me.
I don't hate you, Jeb. But...
Yeah?
I just don't see how I can live here anymore. Not if you're going to be slaughtering my family in the other room. And I can't leave, obviously. So you see what I mean? What else is there for me but Doc's pointless cutting?
I shuddered. He nodded seriously. Now that's a real valid point. It's not fair to ask you to live with that.
My stomach dropped. If I get a choice, I'd rather you shot me, actually, I whispered.
Jeb laughed. Slow down there, honey. Nobody's shooting my friends or hacking them up. I know you're not lying, Wanda. If you say doing it our way isn't going to work, then we're going to have to rethink things. I'll tell the boys they're not to bring any more souls back for now. Besides, I think Doc's nerves are toast. He can't take much more of this.
You could be lying to me, I reminded him. I probably couldn't tell.
You'll have to trust me, then. Because I'm not going to shoot you. And I'm not going to let you starve yourself, either. Eat something, kid. That's an order.
I took a deep breath, trying to think. I wasn't sure if we'd come to an accommodation or not. Nothing made sense in this body. I liked the people here too much. They were friends. Monstrous friends that I couldn't see in the proper light while sunk in emotion.
Jeb picked up a thick square of cornbread soaked through with stolen honey and shoved it into my hand. It made a mess there, crumbling into gluey morsels that stuck to my fingers. I sighed again and started cleaning them off with my tongue.
That's a girl. We'll get over this rough spot. Things are gonna work out here, you'll see. Try to think positive.
Think positive? I mumbled around a mouthful of food, shaking my head with disbelief. Only Jeb.
Ian came back then. When he walked into our circle of light and saw the food in my hand, the look that spread across his face filled me with guilt. It was a look of joyous relief. No, I had never intentionally caused anyone physical pain, but I'd hurt Ian deeply enough just by hurting myself. Human lives were so impossibly tangled. What a mess.
Here you are, Jeb, he said in a subdued voice as he sat down across from us, just slightly closer to Jeb.
Jared guessed you might be here.
I dragged myself half a foot toward him, my arms aching from being motionless so long, and put my hand on his. Sorry, I whispered. He turned his hand up to hold mine.
Don't apologize to me.
I should have known. Jeb's right. Of course you fight back. How can I blame you for that?
It's different with you here. It should have stopped.
But my being here had only made it that much more important to solve the problem. How to rip me out and keep Melanie here. How to erase me to bring her back. All's fair in war, I murmured, trying to smile. He grinned weakly back.
And love, you forgot that part. Okay, break it up, Jeb mumbled. I'm not done here.
I looked at him curiously. What more was there?
Now,
he took a deep breath.
Try not to freak out again, okay?
He asked, looking at me. I froze. Gripping Ian's hand tighter, Ian threw an anxious glance at Jeb.
You're going to tell her? Ian asked.
What now? I gasped. What is it now?
Jeb had his poker face on.
It's Jamie.
Those two words turned the world upside down again. For 3 long days I'd been Wanderer, a soul among humans. I was suddenly Wanda again, a very confused soul with human emotions that were too powerful to control. I jumped to my feet, yanking Ian up with me, my hand locked on his like a vice, and then swayed, my head spinning.
Sheesh! I said don't freak out, Wanda. Jamie's okay. He's just really anxious about you. He heard what happened, and he's been asking for you. Worried out of his mind, that kid is. And I don't think it's good for him. I came down here to ask you to go see him. But you can't go like this. You look horrible. It will just upset him for no good reason. Sit down and eat some more food.
His leg? I demanded. There's a little infection, Ian murmured. Doc wants him to stay down, or he'd have come to get you a long time ago. If Jared wasn't practically pinning him to the bed, he would have come anyway. Jeb nodded.
Jared almost came here and carried you out by force, but I told him to let me speak to you first. It wouldn't do the kid any good to see you catatonic.
My blood felt as though it had changed into ice water. Surely just my imagination. What's being done?
Jeb shrugged. Nothing to do. Kid's strong. He'll fight it off.
Nothing to do? What do you mean?
It's a bacterial infection, Ian said. We don't have antibiotics anymore.
Because they don't work. The bacteria are smarter than your medicines. There has to be something better, something else.
Well, we don't have anything else, Jeb said. He's a healthy kid. It just has to run its course.
Run its course?
I murmured the words in a daze.
Eat something, Ian urged. You'll worry him if he sees you like this.
I rubbed my eyes, trying to think straight. Jamie was sick. There was nothing to treat him with here. No options but waiting to see if his body could heal itself. And if it couldn't... No, I gasped. I felt as if I were standing on the edge of Walter's grave again, listening to the sound of sand falling into the darkness. No, I moaned, fighting against the memory. I turned mechanically and started walking with stiff strides toward the exit.
Wait,
Ian said, but he didn't pull against the hand he still held. He kept pace with me. Jeb caught up to me on the other side and shoved more food into my free hand.
Eat for the kid's sake, he said.
I bit into it without tasting, chewed without thinking, swallowed without feeling the food go down.
Knew she was gonna overreact, Jeb grumbled.
So why did you tell her? Ian asked, frustrated. Jeb didn't answer. I wondered why he didn't. Was this worse even than I imagined? Is he in the hospital? I asked in an emotionless, inflectionless voice.
No, no, Ian assured me quickly. He's in your room.
I didn't even feel relief. Too numb for that. I would have gone into that room again for Jamie, even if it was still reeking of blood. I didn't see the familiar caves I walked through. I barely noticed that it was day. I couldn't meet the eyes of any of the humans who stopped to stare at me. I could only put one foot in front of the other until I finally reached the hallway. There were a few people clustered in front of the 7th cave. The silk screen was pushed far aside, and they craned their necks to see into Jared's room. They were all familiar, people I'd considered friends, Jamie's friends, too. Why were they here? Was his condition so unstable that they needed to check on him often?
Wanda, someone said.
Heidi. Wanda's here.
Let her through, Wes said. He slapped Jeb on the back. Good job.
I walked through the little group without looking at them. They parted for me. I might have walked right into them if they hadn't. I couldn't concentrate on anything but moving myself forward. It was bright in the high-ceilinged room. The room itself was not crowded. Doc or Jared had kept everyone out. I was vaguely aware of Jared leaning against the far wall with his hands clasped behind him.
a posture he assumed only when he was really worried. Doc knelt beside the big bed where Jamie lay, just where I had left him. Why had I left him? Jamie's face was red and sweaty. The right leg of his jeans had been cut away, and the bandage was peeled back from his wound. It wasn't as big as I'd expected, not as horrible as I would have imagined. Just a 2-inch gash with smooth edges. But the edges were a frightening shade of red, and the skin around the cut was swollen and shiny.
"Wanda," Jamie exhaled when he saw me. "Oh, you're okay. Oh,"
he took a deep breath. I stumbled and fell to my knees beside him, dragging Ian down with me. I touched Jamie's face and felt the skin burn under my hand. My elbow brushed Doc's, but I barely noticed. He scooted away, but I didn't look to see what emotion was on his face, whether it was aversion or guilt.
"Jamie, baby, how are you?"
"Stupid," he said, grinning. "Just plain stupid. Can you believe this?" He gestured to his leg. "Of all the luck!"
I found a wet rag on his pillow and wiped it across his forehead.
"You're going to be fine," I promised.
I was surprised at how fierce my voice sounded.
"Of course, it's nothing. But Jared wouldn't let me come talk to you."
His face was suddenly anxious.
"I heard about it. And Wanda, you know I..."
"Shh! Don't even think of it. If I'd had any idea you were sick, I would have been here sooner."
"I'm not really sick. Just a stupid infection. I'm glad you're here, though. I hated not knowing how you were."
I couldn't swallow down the lump in my throat.
"Monster?
My Jamie?"
"Never."
"So I heard you schooled Wes the day we got back," Jamie said, changing the subject with a wide grin. "Man, I wish I could have seen that. I bet Melanie loved it."
"Yes, she did."
"She okay? Not too worried?"
"Of course she's worried," I murmured, watching the cloth travel across his forehead as if it were someone else's hand moving it. "Melanie. Where was she?"
I searched through my head for her familiar voice. There was nothing but silence.
Why wasn't she here?
Jamie's skin was burning where my fingers brushed it. The feel of it, that unwholesome heat, should have had her in the same panic I was feeling.
"You okay?" Jamie asked. "Wanda?"
"I'm tired." "Jamie, I'm sorry. I'm just out of it."
He eyed me carefully.
"You don't look so good."
"What had I done? I haven't cleaned up in a while."
"I'm fine, you know. You should go eat or something."
"You're pale. Don't worry about me."
"I'll get you some food," Ian said.
"You hungry, kid?"
"Ah, no, not really."
My eyes flashed back to Jamie. Jamie was always hungry.
"Send someone else," I told Ian, gripping his hand tighter.
"Sure."
His face was smooth, but I could sense both surprise and worry.
"Wes, could you find some food?
Something for Jamie, too.
I'm sure he'll find that appetite by the time you get back."
I measured Jamie's face. He was flushed, but his eyes were bright. He would be okay for a few minutes if I left him here.
"Jamie, do you mind if I go wash my face? I feel sort of grimy."
He frowned at the false note in my voice.
"Of course not."
I pulled Ian up with me again as I rose. "I'll be right back. I mean it this time." He smiled at my weak joke. I felt someone else's eyes on me as I left the room. Jared's or Doc's, I didn't know. I didn't care. Only Jeb still stood in the hallway now. The others had gone. Reassured, perhaps, that Jamie was doing okay. Jeb's head tilted to the side, curious as he tried to figure out what I was doing. He was surprised to see me leave Jamie's side so soon and so abruptly. He, too, had heard the sham in my excuse. I hurried past his inquisitive gaze, towing Ian with me.
I dragged Ian back through the room where the tunnels to all the living quarters met in a big tangle of openings. Instead of keeping on toward the main plaza, I pulled him into one of the dark corridors, picking at random. It was deserted.
Wanda, what?
I need you to help me, Ian. My voice was strained, frantic.
Whatever you need. You know that.
I put my hands on either side of his face, staring into his eyes. I could barely see a glint of their blue in the darkness. I need you to kiss me, Ian. Now, please. Chapter 42. Forced. Ian's jaw fell slack.
You... what?
I'll explain in a minute. This isn't fair to you, but please, just kiss me.
It won't upset you? Melanie won't bother you?
Ian!
I complained.
Please! Still confused, he put his hands on my waist and pulled my body against his. His face was so worried, I wondered if this would even work. I hardly needed the romance, but maybe he did. He closed his eyes as he leaned toward me, an automatic thing. His lips pressed lightly against mine once, and then he pulled back to look at me with the same worried expression. Nothing.
No, Ian. Really kiss me, like you're trying to get slapped. Do you understand?
No. What's wrong? Tell me first.
I put my arms around his neck. It felt strange. I wasn't at all sure how to do this right. I pushed up on my toes and pulled his head down at the same time until I could reach his lips with mine. This wouldn't have worked with another species. Another mind wouldn't have been so easily overwhelmed by its body. Other species had their priorities in better order. But Ian was human, and his body responded. I shoved my mouth against his, gripping his neck tighter with my arms, when his first reaction was to hold me away. Remembering how his mouth had moved with mine before, I tried to mimic that movement now. His lips opened with mine, and I felt an odd thrill of triumph at my success. I caught his lower lip between my teeth and heard a low, wild sound break from his throat in surprise. And then I didn't have to try any more. One of Ian's hands trapped my face, while the other clamped around the small of my back, holding me so close that it was hard to pull a breath into my constricted chest. I was gasping, but so was he. His breath mingled with mine. I felt the stone wall touch my back, press against it. He used it to bind me even closer. There was no part of me that wasn't fused to part of him. It was just the two of us, so close that we hardly counted as two. Just us. No one else. Alone. Ian felt it when I gave up. He must have been waiting for this, not as entirely ruled by his body as I'd imagined. He eased back as soon as my arms went limp, but kept his face next to mine, the tip of his nose touching the tip of mine. I dropped my arms and he took a deep breath. Slowly he loosened both his hands and then placed them lightly on my shoulders.
"Explain," he said.
"She's not here," I whispered, still breathing in gasps. "I can't find her, not even now."
"Melanie?"
"I can't hear her. Ian, how can I go back into Jamie? He'll know that I'm lying. How can I tell him that I've lost his sister now? Ian, he's sick. I can't tell him that. I'll upset him, make it harder for him to get well. I..."
Ian's fingers pressed against my lips. "Shh, shh. Okay, let's think about this. When was the last time you heard her?"
"Oh, Ian. It was right after I saw, in the hospital. And she tried to defend them. And I screamed at her. And I made her go away. And I haven't heard her since. I can't find her."
"Shh," he said again, calmly. "Okay. Now what do you really want? I know you don't want to upset Jamie, but he's really going to be fine regardless. So consider. Would it be better just for you if..."
"No! I can't erase Melanie. I can't. That would be wrong. That would make me a monster, too."
"Okay, okay, okay. Shh. So we have to find her." I nodded urgently.
He took another deep breath. Then you need to really be overwhelmed, don't you?
I don't know what you mean. I was afraid I did, though. Kissing Ian was one thing. Even a pleasant thing, maybe, if I wasn't so racked with worry. But anything more elaborate? Could I? Mel would be furious if I used her body that way. Was that what I had to do to find her? But what about Ian? It was so grossly unfair to him.
I'll be right back, Ian promised. Stay here.
He pressed me against the wall for emphasis and then ducked back out into the hallway. It was hard to obey. I wanted to follow him to see what he was doing and where he was going. We had to talk about this. I had to think it through. But I had no time. Jamie was waiting for me with questions that I couldn't answer with lies. No, he wasn't waiting for me. He was waiting for Melanie. How could I have done this? What if she was really gone? Mel, 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 come back. Melanie, Jamie needs you. Not me. He needs you. He's sick, Mel. Mel, can you hear that? Jamie is sick. I was talking to myself. No one heard. My hands were trembling with fear and stress. I wouldn't be able to wait here much longer. I felt like the anxiety was going to make me swell until I popped. Finally, I heard footsteps and voices. Ian wasn't alone. Confusion swept through me.
Just think of it as an experiment, Ian was saying. Are you crazy? Jared answered. Is this some sick joke?
My stomach dropped through the floor. Overwhelmed. That's what he'd meant. Blood burned in my face, hot as Jamie's fever. What was Ian doing to me? I wanted to run, to hide somewhere better than my last hiding place. Somewhere I could never ever be found, no matter how many flashlights they used. But my legs were shaking and I couldn't move. Ian and Jared moved into view in the room where the tunnels met. Ian's face was expressionless. He had one hand on Jared's shoulder and was guiding him, almost pushing him forward. Jared was staring at Ian with anger and doubt. "Through here," Ian encouraged, forcing Jared toward me. I flattened my back against the rock. Jared saw me, saw my mortified expression, and stopped.
"Wanda, what's this about?"
I threw Ian one blazing glance of reproach and then tried to meet Jared's eyes. I couldn't do it. I looked at his feet instead. "I lost Melanie," I whispered.
"You lost her?"
I nodded miserably. His voice was hard and angry.
"How?"
"I'm not sure. I made her be quiet. But she always comes back. Always before. I can't hear her now. And Jamie..."
"She's gone?"
Muted agony in his voice. "I don't know. I can't find her." Deep breath.
"Why does Ian think I have to kiss you?"
"Not kiss me," I said, my voice so faint I could barely hear it myself. "Kiss her. Nothing upsets her more than when you kissed us. Before. Nothing pulled her to the surface like that. Maybe... No. You don't have to. I'll try to find her myself." I still had my eyes on his feet, so I saw him step toward me.
"You think if I kiss her?"
I couldn't even nod. I tried to swallow. Familiar hands brushed my neck, tracing down either side to my shoulders. My heart thudded loud enough that I wondered if he could hear it. I was so embarrassed, forcing him to touch me this way. What if he thought it was a trick? My idea, not Ian's. I wondered if Ian was still there, watching. How much would this hurt him? One hand continued, as I knew it would, down my arm to my wrist, leaving a trail of fire behind it. The other cupped beneath my jaw, as I knew it must, and pulled my face up. His cheek pressed against mine, the skin burning where we were connected, and he whispered in my ear,
"Melanie, I know you're there. Come back to me."
His cheek slowly slid back, and his chin tilted to the side so that his mouth covered mine. He tried to kiss me softly. I could tell that he tried. But his intentions went up in smoke, just like before.
There was fire everywhere because he was everywhere. His hands traced my skin, burning it. His lips tasted every inch of my face. The rock wall slammed into my back, but there was no pain. I couldn't feel anything besides the burning. My hands knotted in his hair, pulling him to me as if there were any possible way for us to be closer. My legs wrapped around his waist, the wall giving me the leverage I needed. His tongue twisted with mine, and there was no part of my mind that was not invaded by the insane desire that possessed me. He pulled his mouth free and pressed his lips to my ear again.
"Melanie Strider!"
It was so loud in my ear, a growl that was almost a shout.
"You will not leave me! Don't you love me? Prove it! Prove it! Damn it, Mel, get back here!"
His lips attacked mine again. "Ah," she groaned weakly in my head. I couldn't think to greet her. I was on fire. The fire burned its way to her, back to the tiny corner where she drooped, nearly lifeless. My hands fisted around the fabric of Jared's t-shirt, yanking it up. This was their idea. I didn't tell them what to do. His hands burned on the skin of my back. "Jared," she whispered. She tried to orient herself, but the mind we shared was so disoriented. I felt the muscles of his stomach under my palms, my hands crushed between us.
"What? Where?"
Melanie struggled. I broke away from his mouth to breathe, and his lips scorched their way down my throat. I buried my face in his hair, inhaling the scent.
"Jared! Jared! No!"
I let her flow through my arms, knowing this was what I wanted, though I could barely pay attention now. The hands on his stomach turned hard, angry. The fingers clawed at his skin and then shoved him as hard as they could.
"No!"
she shouted through my lips. Jared caught her hands, then caught me against the wall before I could fall. I sagged, my body confused by the conflicting directions it was receiving.
"Mel? Mel!"
"What are you doing?"
He groaned in relief.
"I knew you could do it. Ah, Mel."
He kissed her again, kissed the lips that she now controlled, and we could both taste the tears that ran down his face. She bit him. Jared jumped back from us, and I slid to the floor, landing in a wilted heap. He started laughing.
"That's my girl. You still got her, Wanda?"
"Yes,"
I gasped.
"What the hell, Wanda?"
she screeched at me.
"Where have you been? Do you have any idea what I've been going through trying to find you? Yeah, I can see that you were really suffering."
"Oh, I'll suffer," I promised her. I could already feel it coming on, just like before. She was flipping through my thoughts as fast as she could.
"Jamie, that's what I've been trying to tell you. He needs you."
"Then why aren't we with him?"
"Because he's probably a bit young to watch this kind of thing."
She searched through some more. "Wow, Ian, too. I'm glad I missed that part.
I was so worried. I didn't know what to do."
"Well, come on, let's go."
"Mel?"
Jared asked.
"She's here. She's furious. She wants to see Jamie."
Jared put his arm around me and helped me up.
"You can be as mad as you want, Mel. Just stick around."
"How long was I gone?"
3 days is all." Her voice was suddenly smaller.
"Where was I?"
"You don't know?"
"I can't remember."
"Anything."
We shuddered. "You okay?"
Jared asked.
"Sort of."
"Was that her before, talking to me? Talking out loud?"
"Yes."
Can you let her do that now?"
I sighed. I was already exhausted.
"I can try."
I closed my eyes.
"Can you get past me?"
I asked her.
"Can you talk to him?"
How?
Where?
I tried to flatten myself against the inside of my head.
"Come on,"
I murmured.
"Here."
Melanie struggled, but there was no way out. Jared's lips came down on mine, hard. My eyes flew open in shock. His gold-flecked eyes were open, too, half an inch away. She jerked our head back.
Cut that out! Don't touch her!
He smiled, the little creases feathering out around his eyes.
Hey, baby.
That's not funny!
I tried to breathe again. She's not laughing. He left his arm around me, around us. We walked out into the tunnel junction, and there was no one there. No Ian.
Good morning, you Mel, Jared said, still smiling widely, teasing. You better stay right here. I'm not making any guarantees about what I will or won't do to get you back.
My stomach fluttered.
Tell him I'll throttle him if he touches you like that again.
But her threat was a joke, too. She's threatening your life right now, I told him, but I think she's being facetious. He laughed, giddy with relief.
You're so serious all the time, Wanda.
Your jokes aren't funny, I muttered. Not to me. Jared laughed again.
Ah, Melanie said. You are suffering.
I'll try not to let Jamie see.
Thank you for bringing me back.
I won't erase you, Melanie. I'm sorry I can't give you more than that.
Thank you.
What's she saying?
We're just making up.
Why couldn't she talk before, when you were trying to let her?
I don't know, Jared. There really isn't enough room for both of us. I can't seem to get myself out of the way completely. It's like, not like holding your breath, like trying to pause your heartbeats. I can't make myself not exist. I don't know how. He didn't answer, and my chest throbbed with pain. How joyful he would be if I could figure out how to erase myself. Melanie wanted to, not to contradict me, but to make me feel better. She struggled to find words to soften my agony. She couldn't come up with the right ones. But Ian would be devastated. And Jamie. Jeb would miss you. You have so many friends here.
Thanks.
I was glad that we were back to our room now. I needed to think about something else before I started crying. Now wasn't the time for self-pity. There were more important issues at hand than my heart. Breaking yet again. Chapter 43. Frenzied. I imagined that from the outside I looked as still as a statue. My hands were folded in front of me, my face was without expression, my breathing was too shallow to move my chest. Inside I was spinning apart, as if the pieces of my atoms were reversing polarity and blowing away from one another. Bringing Melanie back had not saved him. All that I could do was not enough. The hall outside our room was crowded. Jared, Kyle, and Ian were back from their desperate raid, empty-handed. A cooler of ice. That was all they had to show for 3 days of risking their lives. Trudy was making compresses and laying them across Jamie's forehead, the back of his neck, his chest. Even if the ice cooled the fever raging out of control, how long until it was all melted? An hour? More? Less? How long until he was dying again? I would have been the one to put the ice on him, but I couldn't move. If I moved, I would fall into microscopic pieces.
Nothing? Doc murmured. Did you check? Every spot we could think of, Kyle interrupted. It's not like painkillers. Drugs. Lots of people had reason to keep those hidden. The antibiotics were always kept in the open. They're gone, Doc.
Jared just stared down at the red-faced child on the bed, not speaking. Ian stood beside me.
Don't look like that, he whispered. He'll pull through. He's tough.
I couldn't respond. Couldn't even hear the words, really. Doc knelt beside Trudy and pulled Jamie's chin down. With a bowl, he scooped up some of the ice water from the cooler and let it trickle into Jamie's mouth. We all heard the thick, painful sound of Jamie's swallowing, but his eyes didn't open. I felt as though I would never be able to move again, that I would turn into part of the stone wall,
I wanted to be stone. If they dug a hole for Jamie in the empty desert, they would have to put me in it, too.
Not good enough, Melanie growled.
I was despairing, but she was filled with fury.
They tried.
Trying solves nothing. Jamie will not die. They have to go back out.
For what purpose?
Even if they did find your old antibiotics, what are the chances they would still be any good? They only worked half the time anyway.
Inferior.
He doesn't need your medicine. He needs more than that. Something that really works.
My breathing sped up, deepened as I saw it. He needs mine, I realized.